Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Hello and good morning. Happy Friday. It is Friday, March 23rd. I hope you've had a good week. Thanks for tuning in today, this morning, helping get your day started. I appreciate that. You know, sometimes the morning show is like a big meal. You've got take home, and then you've got stuff that sits in your fridge, and it's marked. So you have to sometimes either eat it the next day or, you know, in my case, sometimes stuff gets left in the fridge for so long, I go, what is that back there? All I know is it has a pulse and is living rent-free. I need to get it out. But I'm thinking of what we talked about yesterday, striving to be at peace with all people. That is a big, big challenge because that is not the world I live in. Although I want to be and I strive to do that, it's something that takes a lot of work. And I'm thinking about Proverbs 18:13 that says, to answer before listening, that is folly and shame. Here's another version of it. Let people finish speaking before you try to answer them. That way you will not embarrass yourself and look foolish. I sometimes wonder if those aren't kissing cousins when it comes to striving to be at peace with people. First, trying to just listen, let them finish their thought. That's something I can work on effective today. And coming up in this hour, we've got Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. We're going to talk about some movies that are out, and that's going to be in just a minute. And then Rusty George is going to be with us in the second half hour talking about his book, Better Together. So that might answer some of our questions as well about striving to be at peace with all people. So it is 6 minutes after the hour. When we come back, Adam Holtz is with us.
And trouble. And you need a helping hand. And nothing, oh, nothing is going right.
It's 7 minutes after the hour, and it's that time of the weekend where we're starting to think, all right, what's there to do this weekend? Maybe a little movie now and then, and is always good. Get into the theater, get some $9 popcorn, and enjoy a film. So with me on to talk about that is Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Say, let's start with I Can Only Imagine. That's gotten quite a bit of national attention. I saw, I think, an article even in Time magazine about Christian movies are getting really popular now.
Yeah, you know, I Can Only Imagine is this year's real success story for Christian movies. It opened last weekend and made $17.1 million. And if you don't follow the box office, let's just say that's really good for a Christian movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it often will open to a million, 2 million, 500,000. So for Christian movies, that's blockbuster territory. And if you're thinking, I could only imagine, that sounds really familiar. That's because it was a 2001 song by the band Mercy Me. It was their first hit, and it was written by Bart Millard. And this movie kind of unpacks the backstory of what happened sort of right up to the point that that song hit it big. And I don't know about you. I'm a little bit crusty and a little bit cynical. I think I went in thinking, man, is this just a blatant cash grab? Are they really going to craft an interesting and compelling movie out of the backstory of a song? But the movie really put my cynicism to rest because what happens up until that point is that essentially Bart Millard has a horrible relationship with his father, who is played in this movie by Dennis Quaid, and just a ton of baggage to work through before he gets to a point of forgiveness. And it was a really lovely movie, and I got a little misty-eyed at the end, even though I didn't want to, it still got to me despite myself. So I can wholeheartedly say if you're looking for an inspiring, really well-done Christian movie, this one's worth checking out. His relationship with his dad has some rocky moments, so it may not be totally suitable for the littlest of little viewers. But other than that small caveat, it's just a terrific movie for your family.
Now, Adam, do you think this movie, in addition to it being a good movie that was done well, also had kind of a built-in marketing machine with Mercy Me?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I think these days, Hollywood, Christian movie makers, everybody is looking for an edge.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Hollywood cranks out franchise movies because a franchise is an established quantity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have to do as much work to educate people. And so this, I didn't know this until I wrote the review for it. It was the biggest selling Christian single of all time.
So I did not know that.
2.5 million copies.
Wow.
And I mean, it's at the top in terms of the way they rate these things. And so, yeah, absolutely. There's a huge built-in market for it. And I think that has definitely helped it.
And when you heard the song, does the song come like near the end of the movie? Or
yeah, it does.
Okay, so you got you're reaching for Kleenex at that point, or has the song never been more powerful?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and actually, it wasn't even the song that did it for me as much as just some of the moving things that happen at the end. I mean, it really is a movie about forgiveness and reconciliation as his dad sort of has on his own spiritual journey, and so it, you know, takes some unexpected twists toward the end. I won't give it away more than that, but it really is a movie about a father and a son, and there's a lot of brokenness there. And I think most of us don't have picture perfect 1950s style, you know, father knows best relationships with our dad.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us have had some damage somewhere in there. And in this case, it was pretty severe. But I think people can relate to that idea of imperfect fathers who are nonetheless in some ways trying to do their best and sons trying to do their best. So it really is a movie about reconciliation. And that was what made me a little misty-eyed even more so than the song itself.
Mm-hmm. And Adam, did you also read that the movie had a fairly significant impact on Dennis Quaid?
Yeah, I did see that. And he was on the Today Show, I mean, talking about reading through the Bible. And basically, I mean, it's always hard to tell with celebrities how deep the spiritual sort of impulse goes.
Mm-hmm.
But he certainly was talking about Jesus as if he had come to a place where he has a relationship with him now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if that's the case, man, how terrific is that, you know?
Right. And I love that he is talking about Jesus on national television, on secular national television program.
Who saw that coming? And, you know, this is at least his second Christian movie. He did the movie, the totally blanking, about the young woman who loses her arm in the shark attack.
Oh, yeah.
Soul Surfer. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's 6 a.m. and my brain's still trying to get warmed up here.
That's okay.
And, you know, I wonder if, you know, he did that and that was a good experience and that paved the way for his participation in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just had to wonder, is there a cumulative effect here? And if so, man, what a great example of how these things can influence somebody who participates.
Yeah. Well, Adam, let's get you a pail of coffee and then we'll take a break. We come back. I want to ask you about a couple of new faith-based movies, Paul the Apostle of Christ. We'll start with that when we return, talking to Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 16 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. We're talking movies that are coming out this weekend, movies that have been out. The one we're kind of excited about right now, Adam, is Paul, Apostle of Christ. Should we be excited about that one?
Yeah, we should be.
Oh, cool.
This is another really terrific movie, and we've got a few more caveats than perhaps we had with I Can Only Imagine,
mm-hmm.
but as the title suggests, this is really a story about Paul's life, and it starts in AD 67. Paul is in prison in Rome. Things are pretty grim for the Christian church at that point. Nero is in power. The church has been blamed for starting fires in Rome. There's horrible persecution, and The church is trying to figure out what to do about it. And Luke, the gospel author, Dr. Luke, comes to visit Paul. And the movie really is kind of a flashback over sort of the greatest hits of their missionary journeys together. So we see, you know, what came in the years before that and how the church is responding to horrific suffering in the moment. And I think especially if you're interested in what would it really have been like back in that, you know, first time, you know, first century. We often talk about the first century believers. And I think, you know, what stands out to me is that it was really an extraordinarily bleak time. And, you know, for instance, the streets of Rome were lined with torches that were Christians who were captured and set on fire. I mean, they used them as literally as city lights. And that would be the caveat I was mentioning. I think for really young viewers, and for people who are really sensitive to violence and that sort of imagery, there's the caution there for that, because that may not be something that you want your family to see, or maybe not, you may not want to see it. But I think it really sort of sets the tone for this is the world in which Christianity took root and ultimately flourished. But it was a difficult time, and we get to see that through the eyes of Paul and Luke. And Luke is played by Jim Caviezel, who played Jesus in The Passion of the Christ. So if he looks familiar, it's like, wait a minute. Jesus? Might be slightly confusing.
Yeah.
You can probably work through it.
Adam, what about the spiritual content in this movie? Are we pleased with the way they used it?
Yeah, I mean, this is really kind of like a history lesson.
Okay,
I mean, it's
good.
A drama. It's not a documentary by any means. So obviously there's some dramatic license filling in the blanks. But there isn't anything that we have concerns about in terms of it veers in some way. I mean, this is really an attempt to you know, imagine what Paul's last years might have been like.
Mm-hmm.
And we see him as a resilient man, as a strong man, but as a man who in some ways is still trying to endure a horrible situation. You know, he's in prison. He knows he's likely going to be executed. And the film really concludes coming right up to that moment. We don't see it, but obviously it's implied. So yeah, this is certainly a movie that is true theologically to the gospel and to scripture.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I'm curious, if you were teaching a class and you were talking about the visual images that are in movies today, because they can be so powerful and they can be things you never, ever can get out of your mind. And I think of what you had mentioned earlier about how the city was being illuminated, and you see that in a movie and you think, I'm never going to be able to not see that again in my head. Talk about just the implications that has. You know, when we go to movies, I always kind of want to feel good. There's enough problems in the world that I want to be entertained, and something a little lighter is better for me than something really heavy. Although this is a historical documentation, so this is a reality that I'm okay with being aware of. But just talk a little bit about the power of visual images and how we need to be cautionary about what we take in.
Well, I would just add to what you're saying, Bill. I mean, I think we see things, and there are things that once we see them, we can't unsee them.
Right.
And it's not necessarily that we fixate on them all the time, but they're there. It's in the back of our mind. I thought The Passion of the Christ was an amazing film.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it once, and I don't have a desire to ever see it again. Once was enough for
mm-hmm.
me. And frankly, Saving Private Ryan and Braveheart are in the same category. Now, those are R-rated movies, but
mm-hmm.
they're both realistic depictions of, you know, historical violence. And so
mm-hmm.
I think it's good to think about context. You know, is the context in which I'm seeing some kind of imagery, you know, ultimately, does the redemptive value of that offset what I might see? Schindler's List is another one. I mean, there are,
right.
I can go down the list and think of a number of movies that really helped me understand something but exposed me to something horrific. But unfortunately, you know, those are almost in the minority, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
There's lots of other stuff that exposes us to horrific imagery, and there's no redemptive offset at all. I mean, it's just gratuity for the sake of, you know, what's the most shocking thing we can get away with, and that may be violence, it may be sexuality. I mean, I've seen some things in some movies that I'm like, wow, what did it even take to imagine putting that on the screen?
Right.
You know? And again, you can't unsee it. Now, I have a little folder in my head where I try to tuck it away, and I don't really open that folder. But even so, can we really compartmentalize that completely? I don't think we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I think that being diligent about what we see and what we allow our children to see, I think that's the path of prudence and the path of wisdom. And then when we do see something that's hard, we talk about it afterwards. We process it together. That's the other thing, is that we tend to absorb movies very passively. And I think those images have even more power when we're not being critical about them.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we're willing to talk through them after the fact, then at least you can process, okay, what was that image? How is it influencing me? What do I need to think about going forward? But when we just take it in, and, you know, especially with comedies, I mean, there's a lot of images in comedies. It's like, man, we're sitting here laughing at this, but it's horrific.
I agree.
You know, take a step back. So images are powerful, and I think we need to interact wisely and discerningly and actively, not passively.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can still remember practically the day of the week, the night, the temperature, the night I went and saw Saving Private Ryan. I remember
yeah.
who I went with. I remember as they're rolling
yep.
the credits, and you can hear a pin drop in the theater. Oh,
yes.
With the exception of the people that are sobbing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that gets the power of movie to go straight to the heart. And that is the best and the worst thing about movies simultaneously, is that when you make an emotional argument with a powerful set of images, it can really bypass your critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And you find yourself being willing to take in a worldview that may be contrary to ours, and not even thinking about it because it's presented so emotionally.
Yeah.
So I think that's the other thing that we have to do is emotions are good, but we need to evaluate them too and
mm-hmm.
make sure that they're aligning with truth as well, especially with a really emotional movie.
Mm-hmm. All right, Adam, we just have about a minute left. So we've talked about I Can Only Imagine, a winner at the box office and a great movie, and also yes. Paul, Apostle of Christ. Maybe a recommendation, just for Easter movies, or maybe I just get on Netflix and stay home on the couch and watch.
You know, I think going back and revisiting Risen from 2 years ago is at by far the top of my list for Easter movies. And again, you've got some realistic depictions of violence, so be sure to check out our review at PluggedIn.com. But it's another one that is just a terrific sort of imaginary take on what it would have been like to be there when Jesus died and when he was resurrected. And if you need a fallback position, something a little lighter, it's the Easter Beagle Charlie Brown from 1974 would be my number two pick.
You
can't lose.
You just jogged
right?
my memory that Risen was, in fact, the last movie I saw. And that must have been a couple of years ago.
So yeah, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, I've got to get myself to the theater. Adam, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend at the movies.
Yep, thanks.
Talk to you next time. It's 25 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break. And coming up a little bit later in the next half hour, Rusty George will be talking to him. Be back in a minute. Like that. We're going to take a little break for news, and then we'll talk to Rusty George. Be back in a minute.
Are you paying attention to your teen? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I find that many parents want to care for their teen better, but miss one important point of application. They don't look below the behavior and personality traits on the surface. By the time you've had 15 or 16 years with a child, it's easy to assume you know him well. But that's not the time to slack off in your relationship. Dig deeper in your conversations. Get to know your daughter as if you just met her. She's growing and changing more than you can imagine. And you may find a depth and beauty below the surface that you've never seen before. There's never been a better time to pay attention to your teen.
Having trouble parenting your teen in today's rapidly changing culture? Get instant access to Mark's new free parenting course online at freeparentingcourse.com.
Welcome back to the show. Rusty George is the lead pastor of Real Life Church in Valencia, California. So I'm always a little jealous of that. He's been there 11 years and has grown to over 6,000 people and three different campuses. And he raises some really good questions in his new book, Better Together. Things like, do you ever feel like success in life is all about you? And even when you're trying to die to yourself, it only makes you more self-consumed. Those are good questions. We have Rusty on our studio line this morning, all the way from Valencia. Good morning, Rusty.
Good morning.
So I've never met a Rusty I haven't liked. Now, is your name Russell, or what is Rusty short for?
It is Russell. That's true.
Awesome. So I love your book, and I want to jump into it. And the whole idea, it starts with kind of a tongue-in-cheek quote from Dr. Henry Cloud, and I love Henry, and that quote is this: God is good, you are not, so try harder. So is there any wonder that Christians are open to avoiding church when they hear those kinds of messages, and they'd just rather do it alone?
Right. I think there's a growing trend in our society right now of spirituality is a personal thing, and so who needs church? Who needs organized religion? We've all seen the downfall of that in many different examples. And so people are just saying, well, let's do this on my own, which leads from our individualistic society. I mean, everything we do is pretty much compartmentalized, personalized. You can date online. You can shop online. You can live online. And why not do a relationship with God alone? And I think we're missing out on something.
Yeah. Now, Rusty, you say that you're a self-proclaimed introvert, so you and I have a lot in common. I am one myself. So when we have access to things like really great teaching sermons on the internet, wouldn't it just be okay to curl up with a cup of coffee on the couch on Sunday morning and open up the computer and hear a good sermon? And avoid
so
all those
true.
Avoid all those people types.
Yeah, ministry would be great if it wasn't for the people, right? I was in a meeting one time with a woman who she had stopped coming to church for a long period of time, and I played email tag with her and her husband for a while. Finally, sat down with her and I said, "Hey, we miss you." She said, "Yeah, I just stay home and I listen to John Ortberg on podcast, and that quality is so much better than coming here."
Ooh.
So I'm not sure if I disagreed with her, but I said, yeah, but there's something you're missing by not being together with everybody else. And I think what's happening is, it is a lot easier. It's especially for introverts. Why mess with the crowds, the people, the traffic, the checking kids in, sitting in a room with a bunch of strangers, being forced to greet each other. Make small talk. It can be exhausting, especially for introverts. And so there's this natural pull to just, let's just do this on my own.
Mm-hmm. So the natural premise then would be going to church is about me. And that would be the wrong premise, right?
That's right. That's kind of where we get in this mentality of church shopping. We've all heard that phrase before. We've used that phrase before. And, you meet somebody and they say, well, we're still shopping around. We're still looking for the perfect church. There is no perfect church. I think you find one that you not only helps you grow in your faith, but also you can bring a friend to. I think that's one of the key things people often overlook. And then you find community and you do life together because no one's perfect. No church expression is perfect. That's why we need Jesus.
Yeah. Rusty, what are some of the other reasons Christians, might want to avoid this community and these gatherings?
Mm. Well, obviously there's the hassle aspect, but there's also the fact of, I think we're all scared to be known. So we tend to avoid circumstances or situations where it's going to go below the surface. We can handle work because it doesn't get too below the surface, but now we get into church, somebody might go nosing around into our life. And if you move from, rows to circles, going from being in the church to being in somebody's living room and doing a Bible study or a small group, well, now it could get personal. And I think there's a something inside of us that makes us think, well, first of all, you'll never understand me. No one gets me. Everybody else is an idiot, so mm-hmm. I'm the only smart one in the room. Mm-hmm. So I'll just keep to myself and avoid all these other people.
Yeah, so far I think there's a lot of people that could identify with what you just said. And maybe, mm-hmm. maybe the whole idea is that we go to worship God and to put our own little agendas aside, and then also to think that maybe God has someone there at church today he wants me to encourage. Maybe you've got
that
a little
mission.
That is so
true.
Yeah.
That is so true. I think about an instance where I was, before the service, I'm greeting people, and I'm standing there in the middle of the auditorium, in between the rows, and a woman comes up to me and starts telling me her story. And she's there by herself. She's alone, but she so desperately wants to be there. She just starts crying, and she's telling me about the pain of her life. And out of the blue comes somebody else, and I don't even know this woman. And she just walks over and kind of gently touches this woman on the shoulder, and she says, "Hey, if you don't have anybody you're sitting with, would you join us?" And this woman was thrilled and said, "Absolutely." And so she went over, she sat with her. A few weeks later, I see this woman again. Well, now she's not alone. She's got a group of people with her. She's found community, and she's plugged in. She begins to tell me what God's been doing in her life. That doesn't happen if that other woman doesn't get up and walk over seeing this situation. We tell our kids this all the time because, they're pastor's kids, so sometimes they go to church and they think, "I've heard this, I know this." We just say, "Hey, you're not going for you. You're going for somebody else. Mm-hmm. There's somebody else that's there, for the first time, that's lonely, that's scared. You don't know what's happened in their life." And oftentimes we sit through a church service and we just critique it based upon, did I like that? And a lot of times there's things in there you think, "Yeah, that didn't do it for me, but boy, it did for somebody else."
Yeah.
So who is that person and how can God use you to bless their life?
It does seem that people can be kind of hypercritical when it comes to going to a church service, and they walk into church and, the reasons they didn't like it is the person that greeted me was too friendly, or maybe the person that greeted me wasn't friendly enough. And it's like, oh my, just, relax a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we have this this criteria that keeps getting longer and longer, and we just judge a church service like we would a restaurant or a movie or, it's all based on our own personal preference. And there's no way it's going to get that focused. I think that's the beauty of church is that it is a group experience, not designed for the individual.
Mm-hmm. Rusty, let me take a little break. When I come back, I still have lots of questions for you. I'm talking to Rusty George's new book, Better Together. We'll take a short break and be back in just a minute.
Clear up, put on a happy face.
Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Rusty George. He's written a great book called Better Together, Discover the Power of Community. Rusty, I'm curious about trying to re-enter the church community. If maybe you've had a really bad church experience, maybe you've been hurt, wounded, and all of a sudden, I don't know how I get over that. How do I re-enter?
Well, that's so many people's story. And I would say, first of all, I think you want to go in with a little bit of grace. Recognize that everybody's not the same and recognize that the church is not perfect. And that's why, the Holy Spirit is so vital. And when you enter a church, go into it with the perspective of, does this, you know, not only help me grow in my relationship with God, but is this a place I can serve? Is this a place I could bring a friend? I think a lot of us will pick a service or a church based upon our own personal preferences, but, you know, I hear this a lot from some people who unfortunately leave our church because they think it's too outreach-oriented, and then they come back with a friend that they'd never bring to their new church. I think, why would you go to a church you couldn't bring a friend to? So pick a place you would bring a friend to so you can participate in the Great Commission, because that's when you really begin to grow in your faith. And I would also recommend this. When you go to church, you know, if you're there for the first time, have a seat, experience it, pray through it, and then the next time you go, sit somewhere else. Because depending on where you sit, the pockets of people you're around, we're all creatures of habit. You might have just sat down in the bitter section where there's a lot of people that are also angry about something. Move around a little bit. Connect with some different people. Volunteer as quickly as possible. Get to know some people and get below the surface of just the three handshakes during the greeting time and the hello and goodbye on the way in and out.
Mm-hmm. Rusty, now I want to ask you about this consumer mentality we can easily have. And I just sometimes think about a church community and I think to myself, I hardly have time to see the friends I already know and want to see. What's with me trying to move into a community where I got to meet new people and act interested in their life when I'm so busy and I've got so few people in my life that I'm trying to see right now as it is?
Yeah, I think that we do get overwhelmed with that. But if you were to sit down and write down on a piece of paper, how many people do you really know? How many people really know you? It's probably not that many. You may feel exhausted because of social media and trying to keep up with the, you know, 1,500 friends that you have. you may feel exhausted because of your work relationships. But when you get down to the real true connections, there may not be that many. And so joining something at church, whether it's a small group or a service team or going on a mission trip, yeah, it's going to add some people to your list of, you know, of names. But it's also going to give you some people you can have a deeper relationship with. You don't have to know a ton. You just have to know a few, and a few have to know you. And I think that you go gracefully into that. You go into it you know, just waiting to see what God's going to do. And with the mentality of who can I be a blessing to rather than who's in it for me.
Yeah. Okay, Rusty, let's say I'm a perfectionist, all right? So I step into this new community, and I'm a perfectionist. How am I ever going to find peace when I'm gathering with other believers?
Well, this is the beauty of the church, is you find yourself around people that are different than you, which most of us don't want to do that at all. We only want to kind of segregate ourselves to people that are exactly like us. The problem is if they're exactly like us, that means they have the exact deficiencies that we have as well. So beginning to appreciate people's differences is going to go a long ways. I'm an introvert, but for some reason, I keep finding myself surrounded by extroverts. Is that annoying? Sure it is. But extroverts help me take risks that I would not do on my own. An extrovert is the reason I met my wife and got married. An extrovert is somebody that pushes me into situations that I wouldn't have gone to on my own, but yet benefit my life. So begin to see, instead of the differences in other people, see the benefits of having them in your life and even the benefits you can be to their life.
All right, Rusty, let's maybe flip the coin around and say, how about these people who just love church and everything about church and church all day long, and maybe we're observing them and thinking, boy, they sure spend a lot of time in church. It seems that their family's being a little neglected, maybe. What's up with that?
Right, right.
Give me the gift of criticism, Lord. I might have it.
Right. That is true. Well, I think that that's one of the communities we often miss, the benefit of doing church with family. I think that there's a need for your family not to hate the church, especially for pastors out there. We can raise up kids that end up resenting the church because they just see the church taking from their family all the time. Respecting those boundaries, putting the phone away when you go home, recognizing that you're not the savior for every situation. And when it comes to church as well, you know, using that as an opportunity to build community rather than to meet everybody's needs. I think about some of our volunteers and the old adage is, if you ask for volunteers from the stage, the only people that are going to sign up are the people that are already signed up. And unfortunately, the people that respond to, will you please volunteer, they're the same ones that keep responding to the new pleas. And there's some great Christians out there that are serving way, way too much. And if you don't, you know, obviously have a great relationship with your family, or if you don't know your neighbors, well, then you're missing out on a great opportunity to live the Great Commission rather than drive to church and participate in, you know, hopefully some kind of ministry that would reach your neighbors when you could be doing that on your own.
Yeah. Rusty, in your book, Better Together, what we're discussing today, you have this great thing at the end of chapters. You've got some good discussion questions. And in chapter 7, there's a discussion question that says, how do our bodies and souls play significant roles in our overall well-being in the present? Intriguing question. I wanted to ask you about that.
Well, so much of us are living in the past or in the future. We're dreading what's coming up. We're fearing what's coming up. We're regretting the things in the past. I think our bodies and souls are craving to live in the present. I think embracing the now with the people that are around us, recognizing that everybody in your life is there for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. The people you know now, you may not know in 2 or 3 years. So diving into those relationships, I recognize that I am who today because of friendships that I had 20, 30 years ago. And some of those people I don't know anymore, but they shaped my life. Well, who are you helping shape? Who are you pouring into? Who are you having an impact on? That kind of connection that's in the present that will one day be in the past, but leave a lasting impression.
Intriguing stuff, Rusty. Really nice job. Interesting book. I recommend our listeners to check it out. Better Together by Rusty George. And we do need to live in community, and it's a great reminder, and you help us know how to do that better. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And yeah. I would just tell you this, that we definitely want to help out churches because there's a shortage of people getting in the community. So if you're a church leader, if you go to bettertogetherstudy.com, we've got messages for you. We've got small group discussions, videos. All that's just a free resource for you, so you can download all of that.
Thank you so much for offering that to our listeners, and thank you so much for providing that material. We love it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Yep. Have a great day, Rusty.
Thank you so much.
You bet. It's Rusty George, his book, Better Together. We'll take a short break and be back in just a minute.
If you're picking up drive-through coffee on your way to work this morning, tell them Bill says hi. He's from the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. When we're suffering, it's easy to wonder if God is really there. Here's a good reminder from best-selling author Philip Yancey.
We all have our own hardships, our hard times. I think we wish we're different. And we don't have the promise that those things are going to be taken away from us, magically removed. I mean, even Jesus did not have his hardship magically removed. We have the promise that God can take those hard things and redeem them in a way that is good for us, that actually benefits us, makes us more like the person God wants. I love this phrase I learned from Dallas Willard, who said, "For those who love God, nothing irredeemable can happen to you." Not nothing bad can happen. Bad things do happen. But nothing that can't be redeemed, that God cannot use for your good. That's a strong promise that we can cling to.
More from Philip Yancey can be found at myfaithradio.com.
Thanks to all my guests, Rusty George, Adam Holtz, Dr. Mark Muska, and Carmen LeBurge. What a great show. Thank you for listening. It was on this day in 1912 the Dixie Cup was invented. Made me want to Google some Dixie Cup jokes. Here's one. What causes baldness? The answer is lack of hair. I guess I don't find that funny. And in 1929, the first telephone was installed at the White House. And that was installed by the inventor himself, Alexander Graham Bell. Of course, he said he'd be out Monday between noon and 4. He didn't show up until Thursday during dinner. And he also wanted to eat, so that's what happens. I'm going to leave you with this. James 1:12, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. I've heard from some listeners this week that are suffering and have some trials, and just want you to know I've prayed for you. And Carolyn is one of them. Just want you to know if you're listening, you've been prayed for. God bless everyone this weekend. See you Monday. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.